This is Melissa Dinwiddie from Living a Creative Life with a Thriving Artist Project interview. Today, I'm speaking with artist Michelle Taberge, who I just discovered lives just an hour away from me in the East Bay, Oakland, California. I am on the other side of the bay in Mountain View. So welcome, Michelle. Thanks so much for talking with me today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. I'm excited.
Yeah, I was so excited to hear about you. I think one of my members gave me your name, and I went up to your website and mm-hmm. was super impressed and excited and was so glad that you agreed to do this interview. So let's start off with my first question. Tell me about what you do.
Okay, well, I'm a visual artist for the most part, and my work that I do in the studio, it's sort of a mixture. I was trained in painting and drawing, but it kind of evolved a little bit more beyond that. And there are a lot of reasons for that, but partly because of my longstanding meditation practice, I've gotten really interested in creating environments for people. So I've made several installations, which would be some kind of a room-sized art piece, basically, that someone enters rather than a discrete piece on the wall that's a drawing or a painting. So I do all these things.
Cool.
Yeah.
And you said you also teach as well?
Yes. Yeah. And that's, when you said you were happy I'd done this, I was here to talk to your group, I was just feeling like this is part of my purpose in life. I love inspiring other people to do art and to make art and to make that their lives. And I think part of it is I've been a teacher for, 22 years or so. And I knew I wanted to be a teacher actually before I knew I wanted to be an artist. So mm-hmm. it's just something naturally in me. I just naturally want to teach and help other people. So I'm always like jumping at any opportunity to do that. And so I've taught painting, drawing, mixed media, more intuitive art where I help people, even people who've never made art before, get in touch with their creativity. I've done... one of my things that I do now is I teach the Liquitex, their education programs. So I travel all over the country and give lectures at colleges and universities mostly, and some retail stores. So it's like about, 10% retail stores and 90% speaking at colleges. And so I teach people, I have an expertise in acrylic art materials, and I help them get more out of their materials and sort of understand all the cool stuff acrylic can do to inspire them to, greater stretch themselves further with their art practice. So I do that, I teach my own workshops. And I started a mentorship program for artists this past year, which I'm super, super excited about it because people had such positive experiences and results in it. So that's another piece of what I'm doing now is I'm helping artists get kind of that whole just kind of set themselves up with the life of an artist. So it has to do with just, creating regular practice, creating regular time for all the stuff that it took me a way long time to figure out. I'm helping them get it in a condensed kind of short period of time.
So, that's awesome.
Yeah. So I do a bunch of stuff.
Wow. You and I are such kindred spirits.
Yes. I know. When I saw your site, I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool.
Yeah. I'm the same way with teaching. And I feel like helping people to be more creative and access their creativity and take it, as far as they can take it is mm-hmm. part of what I was put on the planet to do too. It gets me so excited.
Yeah.
So tell me, what is really important to you about what you do? What do you love about it?
Well, in particular, since I do so many things, but starting with art practice, because I always say to everybody, that is the core of what I do and the heart of it. And I don't think I could help anyone in the way that I do if I didn't have such a strong, grounded art practice and connection to my creativity. So starting with that, what's important to me is, first of all, just, the joy of doing it. I do believe that, life is meant to be joyful and that we are meant to be doing things that we love and that excite us. And really, creativity brings out to me sort of like the highest elements of us, And it creates sort of a connection, that whole feeling of when you're in the studio and you feel like time doesn't exist anymore, or you just get that buzz of excitement because you're mm-hmm. on a creative role or whatever that feeling is. So I think that's, to be honest, what got me hooked. Right from high school, where I first took my painting class, I was like, this is such a cool feeling. I love feeling like this. And so I've built a life around that feeling, so mm-hmm. to speak. And so I think that's what gets us in the beginning. And then my mission or my aspiration with my work is to create a sense of spaciousness and openness for other people. Again, going back to the fact that I've been a meditator for 23 years. And so it's just infused my work really deeply. And I kind of feel like, well, you know, meditation's not for everybody. I don't proselytize like, you know, I think it's a great thing if you want to try it. But I do believe that that kind of state of mind can be shared through art.
Mm.
So that's what I'm just hoping to help people get and experience some of the amazing, expansive, grounded, open, connected feelings that I get from doing meditation and having that spiritual practice to get them through art. And I do feel like in the contemporary art world, in a way, because our society has become, you know, agnostic, atheistic for the most part, that is actually a lot of way people connect with their inner self is through art. Like kind of a lot of the contemporary art goers, I feel like there is that element for them.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe not everybody, but I'm just speaking for, you know, some people. I know that they get that feeling, and I do get that feeling from other people's art where it's just, it goes beyond words. It's like a deeper connection or something like that, you know, and I'm sure there's like brain science around that too, which I don't know off the top of my head.
I think you're absolutely right. And I think it's probably a way that a lot of people, particularly people who are sort of leery of the terms spirituality or, mm-hmm. you know, anything like that. I think mm-hmm. it's a way that they do maybe get that connection mm-hmm. in a way where they don't have to define it as, you know, religious or spiritual or,
yeah.
or anything. That's one
yeah.
of the purposes that art serves. That's really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So how long have you been making your living from your art?
Well, that's a good question. You know, I've always had a mixture of things that I've done. So not purely from sales of my art.
Mm-hmm.
And, but I've been, you know, pretty much a professional artist since I graduated. I was just, you know, from undergraduate. So I was just determined that this was going to be my life. And I had no clue how to go about it. And I had a lot of like insecurities and self-doubts and tons of struggles in the beginning. And something kept me going and kept me determined to sort of see this through and figure out a way to put together a life as an artist. So, you know, and I believe it's an ongoing journey.
Absolutely.
You know, I feel like every artist is a creative person in how they live their lives, you know, and how do they make it work? So, but yeah, pretty much since the get-go, I've been doing this.
So you were taking art classes in high school, and then did you go on to get a degree in art in college?
Yeah. So this is interesting because my family was more on the conservative side of, you know, middle-class life, and I didn't even think that I could be an artist. It didn't even cross my consciousness. And I didn't even take a serious art class until my senior year when I had all my college requirements fulfilled and my transcript, you know, to get into the good college or whatever. So, so I just told my parents, like, I really don't want to take chemistry. I really want to take art. And they were like, okay, you can do that, Michelle. You've gotten your transcripts together. So I took art, and it was just, I just loved it. I mean, it felt like I had been doing it all my life. It was just so, it came so naturally to me, painting, and I was just completely passionate about it from the get-go. So I wasn't planning on going to art school. I got into Tufts University and went there outside of Boston in Medford, Massachusetts. And as it happened, so I made a commitment to myself because I loved painting so much. I said, I am going to make sure that every semester I'm taking an art class. And so I did when I got there. And as it would turn out that Tufts University, I'm going to get a little spiritual here because I do believe that in some ways our lives are divinely guided. And I'll tell you, I was deciding between Wellesley and Tufts. And I wasn't even super excited about Tufts, but I feel like it was really meant to be that I ended up there because Tufts has a connection with the School of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston.
Oh, wow.
And so all the professors who teach, or at the time, taught all the fine arts courses were artists who taught at the museum school in Boston. And they were seeing my passion and seeing my work, and they strongly recommended that I start taking classes over at the museum school. So that's what happened. It was sort of like a gradual thing that I transitioned. I ended up with 2 degrees. And again, I think to satisfy my parents, I had the BA, which is in French, which I never used for anything, basically. And then the BFA, which would, you know, to the traditional, you know, parents of the day would have been like the useless degree, has gotten me everywhere. So it just worked out really beautifully for me. So I ended up getting the joint degree. I went an extra year to achieve that, but I, you know, I got 2 degrees in the long run, and I love that I did that. And I want to say, if there are any younger people who are listening to this who are kind of curious what direction to go in, I want to put a plug in for a liberal arts education as a grounding for an artist, because I did find, and this might be my bias, I don't want to put anyone down, but I did find that a lot of the people who went straight from high school to art school didn't have the same kind of depth and breadth in their thinking. A lot of their work was really just about themselves, because they hadn't spent a lot of time thinking about the greater world or their position in that world, or how they might be of service or whatever. It was all, you know, about that stuff you have when you're a late teenager, and the angst and the frustration and stuff. And some really interesting artists I'm thinking of, I remember hearing Matthew Ritchie speak, and he got a degree in science and never did art school. And he makes some really interesting work. And so I've found over and over, a lot of the interesting contemporary artists didn't even go to art school and had a background in other things. And I think sometimes that brings in a lot more richness to your work, because you've thought about other things besides the actual art. I think the art world can often become super self-referential and self-reflective. And not that that's a bad thing. I really believe, honestly, there's a place for every type of art and every artist in this world. And I don't believe in tearing other people down or criticizing or, you know, whatever, what people do. I feel like there's a place for everything. But I feel fortunate that I had that experience, because I took anthropology and sociology and history, and, you know, I lived in France. So I got some other things, other grounding in my life besides just art. And so I feel fortunate that I had that, you know, balance in my undergraduate education that, you know, just gave me a little more to think about and ways to think about it. So.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more. I'm a real advocate for a liberal arts education, and I didn't go to art school. I actually didn't start doing art until I was in my late 20s, mm-hmm. long after graduate school. Mm-hmm. And I'm now, at the time, for a long time, I felt like maybe I was lacking something that I didn't go to art school, you know, mm-hmm. like some secrets would have been revealed or something. And what's interesting is all of the people that I've spoken with who did go to art school didn't learn the things that I would have gone to art school in order to learn.
Oh, interesting. Such as, give me an example.
Well, like, for example, this is going to be a little abstract for anyone listening who's not a visual artist, but color theory. Mm-hmm. I studied with people who went to art school who never learned. They might be good at mixing colors themselves, but they never learned, for example, the split primary system, mm-hmm. in order to mix the colors that they really want to mix.
Yeah.
And those kinds of things they didn't learn in the particular art school that they went to. Now, maybe there are art schools who are teaching things like that, but the people that I talked to, I knew more about color theory than they did, and I never mm-hmm. went to art school.
Right.
So things like that. And then also I have encountered very few artists who learned anything about how to actually make a living from their art in art school.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. And that's where you come in, right? I mean, there's such a need for this, isn't there? To help people figure out this other piece of it. It is, in a way, like the purest sort of ivory tower experience, art school, because there really is, like, you're here in this wonderful environment and getting supported in art, for art's sake, and, you know, no one questions the validity of what you're doing, But then there isn't that much about how to make it work once you get out and you've spent a lot of money and a lot of time there. And it's still great. I am just so glad I got the degrees I did. And, you know, I did go on for a graduate degree and stuff, and I wouldn't trade it for the world. But it's definitely not been, you know, getting those degrees really didn't guarantee that I knew how to set up a life as an artist and make a living and all that kind of stuff at all. And I feel like I'm still learning that, you know.
Yeah. Well, so. I think that really is the key that you just said, that something that in order to figure out how to make a living yourself as, you know, the unique person and the unique artist that you are is an ongoing process.
Right.
And things are changing all the time. So it really is something that you're going to be continuing to learn about forever,
right.
Really.
Yes. Yeah.
So what you got your degree, you got a graduate degree, and then obviously you had to figure out a lot of stuff in order to make a living from your art and your combination of cool things that you do. Mm-hmm. What was the journey for you? How did you go from being a graduate to making your living from your creativity?
Okay. Well, I guess I'd have to go back to the beginning. I just worked at some different, first of all, I was really firmly bought into the starving artist mentality without even realizing that I was in it. Like, I just assumed that there was no money in being an artist, but I didn't care because I loved it so much. I knew I was going to do it anyway. So I am a big believer in the whole thing of mindset and how that impacts what you allow into your life and what you're able to create. And so I just want to fully acknowledge that I was kind of my own worst enemy in the beginning, because I just assumed that I wasn't going to be able to make a decent living and that I had to struggle at a part-time job. And that thwarted me for a long time, because when you're struggling financially, it takes a huge amount of your energy.
Absolutely.
And so anyone who's listening, who's say working full time and saying, gosh, I just want to quit my job and do art full time. It's like, embrace this time that you have a good, strong income to support your art. And there is no excuse for not making art. There are some great artists I know who, you know, work in museums and who still have full time jobs.
Mm-hmm.
So I just think there's no excuse for not doing your art. I'm too busy, I have a family, or whatever. It's just, that's an excuse, you know, that I don't accept from the artists who work with me. And I'm loving about it too. I'm super understanding and supportive, but I want people to recognize that for what it is. It's an excuse. And it's scary to commit yourself to your work, because it's, and I think that's really what's holding people back and why they're saying they don't have time, because it's scary. It's like, what if I don't succeed? What if no one likes my work and all that stuff? But sort of back to me. So I was struggling along. I had a job as a graphic designer. It wasn't even a graphic designer. It was like, I was working in a graphic design department at a software company that made software for large corporations' portfolios to manage their financial portfolios. So it was super conservative in terms of graphics, and we had not a lot of exciting stuff happening there. And I remember one day I sort of got into the elevator, and it was beautiful. I mean, as it is in California so much of the time, and sunny, and I was just so full of cheer and joy at the morning and the day. And then I got inside the elevator to go up, and it was like my energy dropped to my feet. Like, I suddenly was just exhausted, and I was like, okay, there's something wrong with this picture. And I can't do this. This isn't right for my spirit. And I think just, you know, even before I got deeply into, you know, my meditation and spiritual practice, I was in touch with what felt right and what didn't, you know, and I wasn't able to deny that. And so I ended up quitting that job and worked as a nanny, which was way more exciting and fulfilling for me. And I actually made more money at it, believe it or not. So I did that. I, you know, had a non-toxic house cleaning business with a friend. I just, you know, and then I started teaching, and it was like, oh, I loved it so much. And I was just so grateful to start to be able to teach. And it pushed me forward in my own work, you know, because I had to, you know, be bringing everything to my students that I could. I wanted to be on top of, you know, all kinds of art and be on top of my own practice so that I could be a better teacher to them. And so it just, it's sort of like a mutual feeding thing. And I know teaching isn't the way for a lot of people. And I also feel like sometimes it becomes a default position for the artist because that's just, especially someone who's gone to graduate school, they think, oh, well, that's what you can do with this degree is, you know, teach at a college. And, but I don't believe in that. I think that if you're teaching, you should be in love with it.
I agree. You know? I totally agree.
And so I fortunately am in love with teaching. And I've thought, there have been times I've taken, like at one point I kind of liquidated a small retirement fund that I accumulated at a part-time teaching gig. And I just took the time off to paint for like 3 or 4 months. And I was in bliss. But I realized in the long term, that I needed the connection with others. It's a very isolating life as an artist. Yeah. And if you're at all social or socially inclined, or even if you're not, it's probably not that good to spend so much time in your own head by yourself in your studio. So, again, I feel blessed because I have a great balance in my life, you know, and as much as I think, oh, I just want to make art all the time. It's like, no, not really. I want to connect. I want to serve. I want to help others. Like, this is a good balance for me. And I think a lot of times, I felt that way because I was deprived of studio time. But now that I have a really strong, I'm in the studio 4 days a week, so I don't feel deprived at all, you know, and I think that we get kind of in these, what do you call it? Polar thinking, you know what I mean? Where you just like, oh, I don't have any time to make art and I'm so busy with my job and my family or whatever it is you're busy with. If only I could work at art all the time, I'd be happy. And it's like, that's not probably true. You know what I mean? Like the happiness has to come first and then everything else pours out from that. So, you know, I just encourage people to make the time for the art now, pretend like it's your paying job, and then worry about everything else actually will fall into place. And I've had amazing things come to me and opportunities and exhibitions and jobs and stuff like that. So anyway, I know I'm not being super linear or sequential with the answer to this, Melissa.
Oh, you're being perfect.
Okay. So if there's anything you want me to fill in some gaps or, you know, give you a better chronology, I'm happy to go back and do that. I'm just sort of getting on my soapbox.
No, this is great. And it's actually, I have to tell you, it's actually such perfect timing for me because, well, you and I are such kindred spirits, and I love teaching and I love helping people and I love making art and write. And I find being so multi-passionate and having so many things that I love to do, they sort of cycle around. And right now I'm in a cycle of throwing all my energy at the Thriving Artist Project and my other online things, which I'm extremely excited about and are very creative aspects of what I do, but I'm really missing the time making art. And I was just getting into playing with acrylics, actually.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
I should take a workshop from you
because
I just started playing on canvas for the first time and sewing paper onto the canvases and just having so much fun with it. And I am really looking forward to getting back to it. And it's been a conscious decision to leave that for a temporary period so I could really pour my energy into building up the Thriving Artist Project.
Yeah.
But I'm getting antsy to get back.
Yes. Yeah.
And what I've discovered, and it sounds like you've discovered the same thing, is that if you're not doing something and you're feeling badly about it, you are just making an excuse. And the only way to do the things that you want to do is to commit to it.
Yeah.
And you have to make it a priority and continue to make it a priority over and over and over again. Otherwise, it's going to slide down and get left behind.
Yeah.
So it's like you said, it's all about mindset. Mm-hmm. It's a constant, continually going back to sort of rejuvenating that mindset that, yes, this thing is really important to me and I am committing to putting time into it, you know, every day or X times a week or whatever it is that works for you.
Right. Exactly. So, yeah. Can I share with you a little exercise I give to the people in my mentorship?
Please.
Program?
Yeah.
So I'll tell you how this evolved because I a couple of curators asked me to be in a show. They're artist friends of mine who are curating the show called Work a Day. And they invited a group of artists to create work every day for about a month. And so we were supposed to not just create work, complete a piece every day for a month, some interval therein. So we, so it was an amazing project for me because, of course, I was super excited. Like, oh, I love projects like this. I love, you know, just having sort of like a little goal. And so I knew, like, okay, there are days when, you know, I'm, you know, whatever, driving up to Davis or whatever to do a lecture at the college there or whatever. And so I'm not going to have a full day in the studio. So I had to make it manageable. So I set up a table in my office, which I'm looking at right now. And so I have, like, I'm so split up three studios. So like, the table in my office is kind of like my works on paper studio. And it's just, you know, board over two cubes. And I've got my inks. I've got my brushes. I've got an assortment of papers and a lamp and, you know, all kinds of stuff there, right? So I would get up every morning after I meditated. I'd sit here and I'd work. And I'd work for, like, 30 minutes, sometimes an hour, sometimes even an hour and a half. But it was fascinating to me how it changed my practice because I'll tell you what, I had to finish a piece in that, you know, for that. I had to finish a piece. And the thing was, I became less attached to each piece.
Mm.
Oh, I'll just try this. Oh, well, if it doesn't work out, I'll do another one tomorrow. Another one tomorrow and another one tomorrow. And because I knew I was doing another one the next day, I became less attached. And I was amazed with 30 minutes a day. I was feeling so much more connected to my practice than I had ever been before, even in graduate school, because I always felt like I needed at least 7 hours in the studio to connect to my practice, right?
Right.
You know, and I'd have to block off this huge, long expanse of time. And when I say connected to my practice, I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, but the feeling, Melissa, when you are thinking about your work all the time.
Absolutely.
You're just walking down the street or someone says something or you see something and you get an inspiration or an idea for something. That's connection to me, where it doesn't die in you. You're always working on your work. You're working on your work 24/7. Even when you're dreaming, you'll sometimes wake up with an idea, right? And I was at the time I had, you know, I was in my studio 2 or 3 days a week for 7 hours a day, right? And, you know, I would feel like I needed that amount of time. And it was, again, it was almost like starvation syndrome because I would, it was so hard to get me out of my studio. I'd be literally like, it would be getting dark. I hadn't eaten. I was hungry and I just couldn't stop working, you know, because I knew I wasn't going to get back there for another 2 or 3 days. Right.
Right.
But the kind of, it's like, it almost feels like managing a little child or something, your creative self, you know, it's like, okay, well, we're coming back tomorrow. So just put your stuff down and we'll go on with our day. And I promise we'll be back here tomorrow, you know? And so that little creative side of yourself doesn't be like, no, but I have to get it done now. You know, like, ah, this is my last chance, you know? And so I was just, it was just really shocking to me how little time I needed to be connected to my practice and how much I could get done in small intervals. So what I tell people, I think it's like the second or third week of the program, I get everybody working a minimum of 15 minutes a day.
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's all you need to do. And if you have a complicated practice, like you do stone carving and whatever, then you do 15 minutes of little sketches, or maybe you get out some plasticine and you work out some ideas or whatever it is, you can figure that out. Everyone can, with a little creativity, find something that will keep them connected to their creativity on a daily basis. So it could just be little collages, little doodles, you know, little drawings, whatever it is, you know, or maybe you do go into your studio for just 15 minutes and you're an oil painter and you can just keep everything all wet and you just go in and work on it a bit and come back tomorrow and it's all set up. And if everything's set up and also you're doing it every day, there's less transition time.
Right.
You know, that transition time. I mean, I hear people talk about it constantly. I don't really have a problem with it, but I think it's because I'm so regular and committed to my studio practice. But people will, you know, get busy with work and haven't been in the studio for a few weeks. And then it takes them like another few weeks to get back in the swing of it. They never feel like they're productive, or people go to an artist residency and say they need a whole week to settle in. I fortunately, you know, knock wood, never had that. I'm just able to jump in and create. But it might be because I consider my art practice very much like my meditation practice. It just happens. It's like a commitment that I make and I don't let it go. And so it's not that it doesn't slide, you know, and so I'm always connected. So anyway, so they do their 15 minutes a day, whatever it is. and we build that momentum and we feed that creative side of ourselves so we don't starve her. And then it's amazing. And then again, things don't, as you know, one of the really key pieces to the creative process is the letting go of the outcome.
That's right.
And when you do it every day, it's so much easier to let go of the outcome because it's not your only chance. You've got tomorrow and you've got the next day.
Right.
The next day. It's just ongoing. So anyway, anyone who can do that, I really encourage you to consider just setting aside 15 minutes and finding a way to make it happen, even if it's just a little tiny interval. I feel like even people with kids could squeeze out 15 minutes, a lot of parents have a hard time with that because especially when the kids are little and they need so much attention, but you know, during their nap time or before they get up or after they go to bed, you can probably squeeze in a little 15 minutes.
And I can vouch for 15 minutes. Really, if you're doing it daily, it really does affect it roots you into your practice, because that's what I was doing with my little acrylic canvas paintings. I had a commitment every day to go in, and I didn't have to finish something, although that was my internal goal. I had these little teeny tiny canvases, so they didn't require a lot of, a lot of paint to fill up. Mm-hmm. And I tried to go in there with no expectation of what the outcome would be. And what was so fascinating was the first few times I started to do this, I really didn't like what emerged, but I loved the feeling of being in the flow, creating, spending that time just diving in to what I was doing. And sometimes that 15 minutes would stretch out into 30 or 45, but even if it was just 15 minutes, actually just spending the time to do something, what I noticed was over a period of just a few days, I started getting ideas and I started getting excited and I started couldn't wait to get into the studio. Mm-hmm. And then it's a little bit of a dance, because then when you start to get excited about something, then you do start to sort of unconsciously attach expectations to the outcome.
Yeah.
And then it's a continual trying to pull yourself back and just let it be whatever it is and not care whether you like it or not. And mm-hmm. also it helps me to remember that some of the pieces that I've made that I haven't been particularly in love with, other people have. Mm-hmm. Which is a good thing to keep in mind too. Yeah. So anyway, I'm so glad that I'm talking with you today, because now I'm all inspired to get back to my 15 minutes a day practice. But I wanted to get back to you. And when you started teaching, you had worked.
There's one little piece I want to add in here.
Yeah.
You reminded me of something. I want to say about the letting go of the outcome. And this is, now I'm a big believer in artists living handsomely off of their work. And I'm so down with that. And I also want to say something, is that if that's not your case right now, whoever's listening, is that there are so many artists that I respect and admire. I've been in the art world for a while. I know a lot of people, and people whose work is in national and international museums. These people, a lot of them have some outside livelihood, and I want to just give a plug for that. I'm not saying that should be your goal, and if it's not, that's fine. That's beautiful. Just go ahead and find a way to sell your art and do that full time. But there is something about when you are not relying on your art for your income, that you have a certain freedom. So you can follow, and that's what's so important to me, is that deep connection to my creativity. And that being unafraid, and that being able to push myself to any limits necessary. So that when I found that I was worrying about a show or worrying about income from the art, it impacted, like when I've done commissions and stuff, it really cramped me creatively.
Absolutely.
And and I think that's why so many artists I'm thinking of like really successful artists who teach at the college level. And I was like, why do they do that? I mean, their paintings sell for $100,000 or whatever. Why are they working at this college? And I haven't asked them yet. And if you interview some people like that, I'd really like to know about it. Because I think there's a freedom there. Not only do a lot of them just love teaching and helping others and inspiring others, but I think there's a freedom there. So if you went through a period where you weren't, and you just hear of all the, you know, great art, like Philip Guston or whatever, people going through big changes in their work where they were at first not accepted. They got known for one thing. But if they're really connected to that inner creative source, sometimes it's going to take you in a direction and maybe no one's going to like it or get it.
Right.
In the beginning. And if you're worried about selling it or making an income off of it, to me, it can, it could potentially cause you to lose that connection with your creative source. And I think that's at heart, Melissa, what I'm all about is really connecting people deeply with their creativity and honoring it no matter what. So whether it's, loved by everybody or, everybody wants to buy it or not is irrelevant. It's, I believe that, you know, we have this creative genius within us, this, part of us that's just worth honing and refining and that is ever stretching and ever expanding. So that's outside of the world of commerce.
Yeah.
So not denying or the world of commerce. I think it's really important for people to get their work out there and show it and make it available for sale and, you know, have sales. That just boosts you so much. I mean, you know, I sold a piece for like more than I'd ever sold in the past few months. And it was like, wow, it just felt like so validating. So I don't want it to sound at all like I'm saying that artists should just be purely for the art and not ever sell it. I don't believe in that either. But I do want to acknowledge the importance of honoring that creative self inside you. And again, I don't know if this is the correct analogy I'm evolving yet, but the little child, like protect her. And let her know whatever that she does is fine. So it doesn't, people don't have to like it. And she needs to follow that because often, sometimes you go through a period and you don't even like the work, but it leads you to the next place.
Yeah.
And that leads you to the next place. And if you ever deny that part, it shuts down and it stops giving you the ideas and giving you the creativity. You've kind of closed off a part of your brain or whatever. And, told it it's not acceptable, you know. And there are some artists who do, you know, have a satisfying life that way where it's like they get known for something and they do it again and again and again. And that's a valid choice too. I'm really speaking for myself, and I know there are a lot of other artists who feel the same way, that it's so important for me to be stretching myself constantly and evolving constantly, whether people like what I'm doing or not. In fact, I'm working on a piece right now in the studio that is a big stretch for me. And I just decided it's a sculpture basically. And I don't really have any training in sculpture, but I've had this idea for quite some time. And I started working on it in my old studio and then packed it up when I moved to my studio at the Headlands Center for the Arts in Sausalito. And it stood in the box as well as working on other stuff. And then I started, you know, that thing I said about waking up, I was just getting ideas and I was like, okay, it's time to take this piece out. And I'm really on a roll with it. And I don't know if it's going to be successful. I don't know if anyone's going to like it, but I totally am so committed to honoring the ideas that are coming through me and pursuing them and stretching myself and not shrinking back and not saying, oh, well, you know, I'm a better painter and everyone knows me as a painter and I do drawing and stuff, but just saying I'm taking a risk here. And because I'm not concerned whether I sell this piece or not, then I have that freedom.
That it's such an important point, and I can vouch for, I've had that experience myself. I actually make my living primarily from doing calligraphic artwork, mostly for weddings and other life cycle events. I'm a ketubah mm-hmm. artist mm-hmm. and Jewish marriage contracts. Mm-hmm. And I got into that because I was incredibly passionate about calligraphy. And I actually started doing calligraphy with the dream of mm-hmm. being a ketubah artist. And what I ended up doing was figuring out how I could most effectively make a living wage, basically, doing that. And that became sort of all I did. Mm-hmm. And then I ended up creating a business, trying to liberate some time by creating a business where I was just selling prints of my work rather than always doing custom work, mm-hmm. heavily art directed by my clients, which was mm-hmm. getting very old. And what I discovered was that I wasn't spending time making art, and here mm-hmm. I was making my living from my art, but mm-hmm. I wasn't really making much art. Mm-hmm. And I felt like almost like going to my drafting table was almost like a busman's holiday. Mm-hmm. And it really changed mm-hmm. my relationship to my art, which mm-hmm. was really sad. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, because of that, because I had this relatively steady source of income that was kind of running, you know, that I had to put work into, but was running, mm-hmm. I was able to liberate some creative energy mm-hmm. to focus on other things. And I ended up becoming a professional jazz singer. So,
wow. Oh my God.
So I went to a completely different place with mm-hmm. my creativity that mm-hmm. fed me. And I was very, very conscious of the fact that I didn't want to ever feel like I had to rely on my music to pay the bills,
right.
Which is a different thing from saying I don't want money from my music.
Right.
Totally different thing. I'm mm-hmm. delighted when I make money from my music, but mm-hmm. I am at this point in my life not interested in trying to turn that into my full-time income source, because I know mm-hmm. how that can change a relationship, you know, mm-hmm. to your creativity. And mm-hmm. with the other paintings that I'm doing now, which are completely not related to clients, completely not commissioned, totally for my own pleasure, my own spiritual fulfillment, but I do want to put them up for sale and mm-hmm. and find an audience of people, which I suspect is out there, who will want to buy them. But it's but I have the freedom to do that because I basically have effectively a 9-to-5 job doing, mm-hmm. you know, selling my other art mm-hmm. as well as my online offerings. So what mm-hmm. you were saying earlier about if people have a 9-to-5 job and they're just wishing that they could just make their full-time living from their art and quit their job, to not do that, you know, precipitously, to mm-hmm. to really be thoughtful and careful about that decision, because there is, yes, it is frustrating to have all your time taken up doing something that is not the thing that you're most passionate about. Mm-hmm. But there's something really wonderful about having financial stability as you find ways to make money from the thing that you are really passionate about without, hopefully without damaging your relationship to that creativity.
Right.
So back to how you did that, mm-hmm. When you started teaching, were you teaching privately or through institutions? How did you go about that?
My first job, I sent out a bunch of resumes when I moved out here, and I was thinking, I guess I only thought I would be qualified to teach kids. And also, you know, I'd been one of those kids who babysat a lot and loved working around kids, and I did my own little kids summer camp, and we did arts and crafts when I was a teenager and stuff. So that's what I was thinking. I sent my resume around, and I also sent it to Studio One Art Center, which is an art center here in Oakland, California. At the time, it was really like amazing, thriving place with, you know, 100 class offerings every term, and, you know, photography, sculpture, jewelry, ceramics, painting, drawing, drama, everything. It was a really cool place. And they called me for an interview when one of their painting teachers was leaving to move somewhere else. And I was just like over the moon, you know? And so I started teaching there. I got the job, and that was my first teaching gig. I actually had taught in an after-school program when I was in college. So then that just sort of evolved, and I started, I ended up being very involved there for 10 years, and I taught painting and drawing and intuitive painting, and I was coordinator of the painting and drawing division there. So it just kind of evolved into a lot for me. And all the time I was working on my own art. And then I also started working with kids, which was a real gift for me, because watching and observing their relationship to their creativity is so inspiring because there are no censors when they're under 7 years of age. They, as long as there's no one telling them it's wrong, they are just, you know, blasting out these paintings and really some very genius stuff. And it's really fun to watch. And so I was really, I got so much out. I really felt like they were my teachers in so many ways, just watching them. And it really encouraged me myself to sort of free myself up creatively. And that was part of, you know, my process when I was a lot younger. So I'm talking about kind of my early to mid 20s when all this was happening. And I stopped teaching kids over time. It ended up that it was just became draining. When it impacted my own art practice, that's when I left.
Mm-hmm.
Because I felt like I was giving so much out and I didn't have as much energy for my own art practice. And so I had to just kind of let it go. So I only work with adults now. And I've taught at, you know, local community colleges, you know, in their extension programs. I taught at the California College of the Arts. I taught at an arts camp for adults for maybe, 8 years. I went ever, and that was a really cool experience. It was so fun because we were out there up in the mountains and living in tents and cabins and, you know, making art all day and having our meals cooked for us and going swimming in the hot afternoon. It was just so fun. So I've had a lot of really cool teaching experiences over the years and just, you know, being open and applying for stuff. It's a lifestyle that's worked for me, because it's a lot of variety. So I've ended up having different jobs. And I think the key is that if that works for you, that's great. Some people need a lot more stability than I do. I like variety,
mm-hmm.
and I like having different things to go to each day. And so, and also they would, a lot of what I liked about some of these, you know, these extended education or adult education programs was that they had shorter terms and longer breaks. So mm-hmm. I would have more time to work on my art in between. So I liked that too. That was a good thing for me.
So how much of your income now is from teaching compared to selling your art or other income streams?
Let's see, that's a good question. I'd have to pull up my Quicken report to get. I'm thinking of last year. Let's see. I would say probably 25% is currently coming from my art in alone. And 75% is coming from teaching and other streams like that. I think that's where I am right now with that.
So when you started teaching and that sort of evolved over time, and meanwhile you were continuing with your own art practice, and how did you figure it out how to bring in income from your art?
Oh, that's an interesting question. Well, you know, I think it's interesting because when I think back to my very first sales, a lot of the sales were to people who just knew me,
mm-hmm.
you know, friends, families, students, people in my network. And I think that's an interesting thing to point out to a lot of artists, that, you know, people who haven't sold anything yet. It's like if you start creating opportunities for people to buy, you probably already have people who know you who would be delighted to buy your work. And sometimes you have to formalize that and have the show or the open studio and put the prices up so they know it's okay to ask to buy something. You know, not everyone's just going to be like, oh, I want to buy one of your pieces because they don't know how much it costs or whatever. So, I mean, I think my very first piece I had an exhibition at Studio One in the gallery there where I was teaching, and one of my students bought it. And it was really neat because it was one of my favorite pieces to date. I still love that painting. And she didn't have enough money, so she asked if she could do a payment plan. So she took 6 months to pay it off, and then I gave her the painting, which I thought was really neat. And it meant a lot to me, you know, that she was going to that much trouble to buy
that.
Yeah. And so then, you know, I guess other sales just happened through having different shows. And then I started working with some galleries, and they sold work. And their prices was good because they tend to charge more.
Right.
For work. of course, you get 50% of that sale. So you don't get 100% as if you sell it, as when you sell it yourself. So, but I've had, you know, some good sales from different galleries I've worked with. And so does that answer? I'm not sure I got at the root of that question.
Yeah. I was wondering how much your website, and I know you have a newsletter where you send out a little piece of art.
Yes.
Is it every day that that goes out?
Once a week.
That's
Saturday mornings. Yeah.
So how much of that, you know, how has that affected your business?
So that, see, I feel like, Melissa, this is new territory for me and I'm just moving into it. And one of the things is that the whole concept of being a little more empowered, you know, because I really thought I had to wait for someone else. You know, I had to wait for the gallery representation or something
right.
to happen. And I think it's a brave new world out there for artists, and we're really on the cusp of something very exciting. And so when you bring up the online thing, I think that's great. I think, and I am just starting to tap that potential. So my website, and I'm going to redo my website because it is the traditional sort of artist brochure portfolio website. It's pretty conservative in the sense that it's, you know, there aren't prices on there. It's not, it's not very overly commercial or whatever in that sense. And I'm starting to rethink it, and how to do it. And I haven't really found models yet for that, you know, who's out there doing it in a way, because it feels like there's the different extremes. There's, there's sort of, I'm pretty firmly embedded in the contemporary art world. So the kind of work that you see, you know, in the museums or whatever. So there's that. And then there's other art worlds out there that would be, you know, maybe people who do landscapes and they sell them through different venues, you know, that might be, you know, I don't know, like we're near the wine country. So there's like a lot of demand for that kind of art, you know. So it's like stuff that probably won't ever end up in the Museum of Fine Art in San Francisco because it's not interest in sort of what their mission is just sort of push the boundaries of art and kind of move art forward in this certain way. And so I think my work fits more in that area than mm-hmm. in sort of, you know, someone who's working in a more traditional manner perhaps or whatever. So, so that said, I kind of lost my train of thought. Sorry.
were talking about the online world and.
Oh, right. So the online world. Okay. So there are people who are doing that, who have these websites that sort of sometimes like, I think, oh, I'm not sure if I'd be really comfortable with that type of commerce, e-commerce website, but I'm trying to be open-minded and maybe get over myself. And my husband has been really helpful because he's a vintage guitar dealer and he also collects art, right? So he's always online. He's like one of those people who would be out there looking for your work, right? And he doesn't collect so much contemporary work, but anyway. But, you know, when you think, like, who's out there and what are they looking for? And how are you going to connect with them? Because I do believe, like you said earlier, there is an audience out there for our work. Our job is to help them find us.
Right.
We can't stay hidden, right? So it really is our duty to get the work out there because I do believe, you know, it's on a spiritual level, you've been given this gift, which is your creativity and your and the actual piece itself, you know? And to help connect someone with that and complete that cycle to me is really a beautiful thing. So, so I'm going to redo my website to make it a little more browser friendly for your average, you know, art person who's out there looking for stuff, and also with search tools and stuff. So a lot of people will search by a color. Let's be honest.
True.
Here, you know what I mean? It's like they can't put certain colors in their room. It's just not going to work, you know? So they are thinking of decorating a room and they think, I was like, well, you know, I need to have some, you know, tags in there where they can find this, you know, blue painting or birds or whatever the subject matter they might be interested in to help them find me. So there's that. But as far as the my weekly thing and how that's impacted me, I was mentioning I'd had a really significant sale this year or last year. And it was someone who subscribes to my ArtFix. So I wasn't trying to sell anything. And I just am sending out this art fix, you know, with the drawing and the quote to inspire people. And if anyone wants to sign up, you can go to my website, which is michelletaberge.com. And there's a little sign up box. You just put your name and your email. And I'll spell my last name because it's unusual. It's TheBerge.com. And so you can sign up for that. Every Saturday morning, I give you a piece of art and an inspiring quote. And it's interesting to me because people, I've gotten the most amazing feedback, and there's nothing more satisfying than feeling like your work is touching people, whether you're making income from it or not. It's like just such a wonderful feeling to know. I had a friend come up. I mean, people will come up to me that I didn't even realize were subscribing. Like, oh, I love getting your art fix. It's so inspiring. I mean, one artist said it had changed his life.
Wow.
He gave me a present. He works in stones and jewelry, and he gave me this present he'd made for me. He said, I want to give this to you. And I didn't realize he'd even signed up.
Wow.
And he's like, Michelle, I get this every Saturday, and I get so inspired, and I want to get out and create stuff, and I'm out there in the studio doing collages. I mean, he's actually doing more art than his stonework because he's inspired. Oh, it's just meant so much to me. I can't even tell you. So anyway, so this guy, you know, he was one of the, like, people who would comment, because you'll find if you end up setting up something like this, which, you know, don't feel free to steal my idea. Everyone's welcome to, you know, try this idea out. But there are people who will respond. Not everyone will respond. But he was one of the people who'd, like, make little comments and say stuff. And then just out of the blue, he said, I think I might have a place for the piece on your website. And it's a really large piece. And so anyway, I was like, oh, okay. So we had a little more back and forth conversation. I ended up selling that piece to him. And it just made me so happy to have it go to someone I knew. And I knew who would, like, really appreciate it and cherish it. And to sell this piece that I'd actually done for a museum show, not really thinking I was going to sell it. I just did it because I was excited to be in the show. And I had an inspiration that went with the theme of the show. So anyway.
Well, Michelle, this brings up such a good point, because you said that your first sales were to people who knew you.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing about your art fix, and I know there are a lot of artists out there who are doing daily paintings and sending out daily emails or weekly emails or whatever.
Yeah.
With a painting, frequently they'll have it for sale, or you can buy it on eBay or Etsy or their website or whatever, or contact them directly. The thing about that, and I'm always encouraging my Thriving Artist Project people to think about this, is every time you touch somebody, you connect with somebody in that way, they are getting to know you.
Yes.
And so you are continuing to sell to people who, whether you actually have ever met them or not, the people who buy from you are more likely than not going to buy from you because they feel like they know you and they like you and they trust you.
Yeah.
And so, you know, that's one of the beautiful things about the online world nowadays, is that we have so much, you know, bigger opportunity to connect with so many more people because of it. So, so there you go. Just,
yes,
you're fantastic proof of.
Yeah. And that's not even trying yet. Like, my plans for this year are to double my art income is my goal, and to start, you know, making offerings to that list specifically. And I'm not sure yet how I'm going to go about it. So, but I've thought of doing like a one-time sale instead of, you know, offering each piece individually. I don't know yet. And I actually have some pending sales, from the art fix too.
Really interested to see how that goes. You should definitely keep me posted on that.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. So,
well, I had a few more questions I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
If you've covered this a little bit before, but if you were talking to someone else who was really interested in doing their creative thing full time, what piece of advice would you give them?
Oh, guys, there's so much. That's why I actually wrote an ebook, Melissa, that's coming out really shortly.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's called 7 Essential Practices for the Professional Artist. And that includes people who want to be a professional artist. But it sort of, like, encapsulates a lot of my thoughts about it, you know. because it's hard to just say, you know, briefly. I think if I had to winnow it down to one little piece of advice, it would really be about staying true to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, really, what is your core and why you're in it? And I just think there are so many ways for this life of an artist to manifest itself. And you and I have just in this course of conversation shared just from ourselves different ways we've manifested it, you know. And I think that it really has to be what you're passionate about and joyful about. So I think, you know, keeping close to yourself, basically. But if anyone wants to get that ebook, they can go to my website, themindfulartist.com, and download it. And I go really into detail about my whole philosophy of what it is, you know. And it's amazing how I've evolved this way that really works for me. And I even feel that people are going to benefit from it who already are artists, but who maybe haven't, you know, the whole thing about the regular studio practice, haven't ever completely evolved that, or who have trouble managing their time. I think that's real common with artists.
Mm-hmm.
Tend to be very right brain. And we should accept that and acknowledge that and not get down on ourselves. But that left brain stuff's important to your success too. And so how are you going to learn that too? You know, keeping on top of your priorities, keeping on top of your tasks, making sure you follow through, having the support you need. I mean, these are all things, you know, that I talk about in the book, like, you know, community, support, you know, consistency in practice, keeping, I sometimes call it thought management. which is just watching those thoughts that come up in our heads, because I think that is a big stumbling block for a lot of artists.
Definitely.
That critical voice that comes in and it sneaks in. A lot of times you don't realize, you know, we're being cynical or critical or something like that. Even when it's aimed at other people, it is detrimental to our creativity. Even when you're if you're tearing down other artists, I don't really believe in that, because not only it's not a nice thing to do, but it's not nice to yourself.
Yeah.
Because every time you tear someone down, you're draining and zapping your creative energy. The creative energy is really powerful, and it doesn't thrive in a petri dish of judgment, criticism, and cynicism. You know?
Absolutely.
So you want to give yourself the best possible conditions to thrive that way. And you know, the understanding the creative process is another thing that I talk about too, is just that I wasn't taught that in school either. Like, what is the creative process? So when I came across the normal stages of it, I didn't know how to navigate through them, and I would get a little caught up, and it was hard in the beginning, I will admit. I had some, I call them kind of like my, you know, the dark night of the soul.
Yeah.
I really, really suffered trying to get a regular studio practice going, and I'd go in the studio and I'd get like tired, and I was like determined to make this happen. I was just crippled by self-doubts about my work and just all this stuff. So I really have evolved a really sustainable way to keep myself going as an artist, and I'm just so happy to wake up in the morning and doing what I love to do and getting to talk to people like you. And I mean, this is just, it's an awesome, awesome life, you know, but you need some support to make it work. I would
absolutely. That leads to my next question, was going to be, are there any mistakes that you've learned from, or if you were doing it all again, are there things that you would do differently?
Yeah, let's see. I wish I'd had someone like me or you.
Me too.
Really, honestly, like if I'd only had some kind of a mentor to help me out, I just would have like, you know, I didn't know what I was doing, and I was really, I had a lot of people who were in the same boat as me. So you kind of try and help each other out, but it really helps to have someone who's really got it rolling, who can give you a bigger picture. And honestly, I think that really would have helped me more than anything, because I figured everything out. I bumbled through, but, and I'm still, like I said, I'm still figuring stuff out, like online selling. I'm like, that's my new thing this year, is like, okay, I'm going to find the people out there. I'm going to mentor people. I'm going to take programs. I'm going to do whatever it takes to kind of learn a bit more about this. But yeah, and I encourage everybody to get help and not try and do it by yourself, because it's not, Why? You know what? Life's too short. Why waste your time?
Oh my God, absolutely. Boy, and that I become so much more aware of that as I get older.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, we should be doing what we love to the best of our ability.
Definitely. Yeah. Well, I have one last question for you. This has been just such a fantastic conversation. I'm so glad that you agreed to do this. My last question that I ask everybody is, what do you still want to do to complete your dream?
Oh, wow. I love this. Oh, I love these kind of questions. Let's see. I don't even think my dream will ever be complete, to be honest. I think that it's continually evolving. So I am living my dream now. In the beginning, oh, this is another thing that I teach people in my mentorship program is, you know, we do visions and we write things down. We get really clear on what we want. But once you've achieved it, you're on to the next dream.
Right.
But as a big vision for my life, you know, it's more just about continually expanding myself personally and as an artist and sharing that with the most people possible in this world. And I have ideas of how that might manifest. I mean, really see my work in, you know, more museums in the future and more, you know, I've been fortunate to have shown in, you know, Europe and Asia and stuff, but more of that. And so it's just kind of like more of the same, just like a bigger version of what I'm already doing. Does that make sense?
That totally makes sense. Yeah. I love it.
I think my honest dream is to just keep connected to my creative source and keep making work, you know, and that if nothing else happened, I would die happy.
Oh, that's so great. I love it. Well, Michelle, I just want to thank you so much for talking with me. And can people find you?
So there's my website, which is michelletaberge.com. And it's Michelle with one L. But if you type in two L's, I've got to redirect. It'll take
That's you very smart.
But you have to have the Taberge right. So it's T as in Tom, H as in hotel, E as in echo, B as in Bravo, R as in Romeo, G as in gorilla, E as in echo, and .com. So it's michelletaberge.com. And love to hear your feedback on anything if you see on my site or whatever. I love hearing from people who check out my site, and feel free to sign up for the Art Fix. And then I'm also going to be launching the mindfulartist.com, which talks more about, you know, a lot of the stuff that I help other artists with to get them kind of moving more towards putting art in the central stage in their lives and really honoring their passion and their gifts. So that's themindfulartist.com. And I will have that ebook up there. It's going to be coming soon. So probably by the time people are hearing that, it'll be up. And also love to hear anyone's feedback or thoughts on that. You know, I like to keep the conversation going. I feel like I'm continually learning. And I love that you do these interviews because I just think it's such a beautiful thing to constantly be learning from other folks and seeing what works for other people. I think a lot of what you realize as an artist is sort of, you do have to kind of blaze your own path in a certain way.
Yeah.
And find out what's authentic for you and what works best for who you are. We're all so completely unique. So there's never one formula, is there?
No, you're totally right. That's exactly why I'm doing the interviews, to show people a range of what's possible and hopefully inspire them to forge their own path.
Yeah, I'm sure you will. I'm sure you already have. I think it's a beautiful project and so cool. So kudos to you.
Thank you. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
And thanks. I will be in touch soon.
Okay. All right. Take care.
Thanks. You too.
Bye.